It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Morrell drives one in the air. Deep left center. Get out the tape measure. Long gone.
But they come in bunches, partner.
Way up into the bleachers in left center. And the Cubs lead 4-0. And the bunch just got a little bit bigger. The 0-2 pitch on the way. Ground ball to short. Swanson's got it. Throw to second. Cubs win. The Cubs win the ball game. 6-4 on the fielder's choice. And the Cubs have evened up this series at one victory apiece. In many ways, a very typical Cubs-Brewers game, Ron.
Yeah.
Lee, and that's a base hit into center field. Over the head of Gorman. Two runs off the mound. And Jimenez comes in to tie the game. Corey Lee picks up two ribbies. The 2-1 to Pham. And he delivers into left. It's the White Sox taking a one-run lead here in the 10th. Tommy Pham, he does it again. All of a sudden, Busch Stadium with some energy again. Bases loaded. Cardinals down to their last strike. Ring him up! Strike three! And Tanner Banks comes in, gets the strikeout. And the White Sox, after a 3-hour and 3-minute rain delay, win it 6-5 in the 10th.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Sing it. Ba-da-ba-bum, ba-da-bum, ba-da-bum. There's bass trombones in there. We're pretty sure. We've talked to our brass playing friends. Need somebody with much more familiarity with the lower register. Me, I'm just a trumpet player. Still got the trumpet I bought with my bar mitzvah money. It's been a long time, but it's still there. Break it out every once in a while. But that is not why you called. Good morning, everybody. It is Hit and Run, the Score's venerable, not vulnerable, but venerable baseball show. We talk everything in this two-team town. We get to do whatever we want in a very interesting baseball city, do we not? We are on from 9 until 12:45 today as Cubs pregame will come your way. Cubs Brewers for the finale of a very hotly contested, interesting series between the two top teams in the National League Central. Cubs now just a game back of Milwaukee. Fun to talk about like it matters here on May the 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo to everyone. The only two teams over 500 in the NL Central are the Cubs and the Brewers. Meanwhile, in the AL Central, everybody's over 500 except the White Sox. Even the Tigers at 18-15. It's the only division in baseball with four teams over 500. In that division, you have a plus 45 run differential Kansas City Royals, who are tied with the Orioles for the best run differential in the American League, and the Guardians at plus 40. And neither of those are the team of the moment. That's coming up. We do team of the moment every week here on Hit and Run, whatever team around baseball has us thinking and talking. We will check in on the leaderboard. We're going to look at a couple different positions on the leaderboard and sort of talk through where the Cubs and Sox stand and what it means for the rest of baseball. You'll hear a snippet of the PBP, the play-by-play Voices of Baseball podcast I do. Scott Fransky, the Phillies post, Phillies radio guy, is the guest this week. My God, he's awesome. So that was fun. And then there's a few guests along the way. First up, later this hour, Tim Dillard, the Milwaukee Brewers pre- and post-man, who is a very entertaining human, pitched in MLB. His dad pitched for the Cubs. We'll talk to Tim Dillard at 9:40 about the Brewers and the Cubs. Ben Brown, the Cubs starting pitcher, is he a future closer? Who knows, people? But either way, Ben Brown is throwing a bullpen this morning and is going to join us after that. We were originally going to talk to him at 10, but then the show was thrown into chaos when we found out that Ben Brown will join us at 11:30. My God, what does that mean? What are we going to do? We're going to panic. We're going to freak out. And we're going to ask James Fegan if he can move to noon, which he can. So look, on the bonus hit and run, we get James Fegan from Sox Machine at noon? Come on! Does it get any better than this?
It's all Ruben, man. He comes up and the good guests show up, huh?
The associate producer is here to do his job. His options were to hang in here for segment one and listen to Dad Monologue, or go and hang out with Sean Sears in the control room. He said, can I just go out in the lobby over there? And I said, no, you are part of the show, sir. This is what you do. You're here. You're working.
Can I go on the line?
No, Sean, we need you. Sean Sears, you're essential. Sean and I have some fun stuff prepared for you today. Little opens for the guests, of course, but also later on today, we're going to give proper respect to a Chicago baseball legend. And I'll let those of you who have an idea wonder who that might be. But let's talk about relevant and important baseball in this town. Electricity yesterday on a perfect baseball day. Lucky enough to be there in some good seats close with my wife and two friends in from out of town. Minnesota Twins fans in from out of town wearing their Twins jerseys. Your thoughts on friends from out of town who wear their favorite team's jersey to the ballpark when that team is not playing. They were not in Brewers jerseys, so, you know, but they were not in Cubs jerseys. They were representing Twins jerseys. It threw me off, frankly. But I respect the love and the loyalty. We had a great time on an absolutely gorgeous day. And it's fun to always get the perspective of those who haven't necessarily had a chance to sit close at Wrigley, because it's different than sitting close anywhere else, except maybe Fenway. It's so low, and you're right there, and it is a different kind of game. You really get a sense for a lot of body language, a lot of personal dynamics, a lot of individual athleticism, and that's going to be part of this conversation, because I'll give you a few things on yesterday's Cubs game, which was a very fun win. And you know about some of the highlights, which you heard on the way in, Christopher Morel's home run, and Patrick Wisdom with a home run. Let me say this off the top. That man earned some playing time and some big at-bats yesterday with what I thought was the biggest at-bat of the game in the eighth inning. They need an insurance run, and Patrick Wisdom is up with a man at third and less than two outs. Got to shorten up, even though you've homered earlier in the game, even though your thing is the power guy. This is where you need the B-hack. You need to shorten up, and here's what Wisdom did.
Here comes the 2-2 now on the way.
Line drive, base hit to center field. Coming in to score, Michael Busch. Patrick Wisdom delivers. Nice.
That's a real good at bat by Patrick Wisdom. And, you know, for years we have watched and known and dissected when Cubs power bats are unable to shorten up and do what they need to get some contact in a big moment. He did, and that was an insurance run. And, of course, it mattered because Hector Neris is a modern-day Rod Beck. El Tirador is the shooter in Spanish. We will give that to Hector Neris. Because he also doesn't have the overpowering fastball. What he does have is cojones. And so did Rod Beck. My goodness. But there was a moment yesterday where Neris came back and was throwing high splitters. I think it was to Contreras. He threw a high splitter at like 83. 83. Might have been 84. But that wouldn't be nearly as much fun to say. So it's eight. But high splitter. And Contreras swung under it, Fastball maxes out around 94. That splitter is funky, though, and he made some hitters look silly as he struck them out after giving up walks, which he always seems to do. Once he finds control, he's pretty darn good. But, man, he's stressful, and the Cubs need some bullpen help. We know they do, and it underpins all of your thoughts on the Cubs, right? But here's the thing. You know they're going to go get it. You know they are. They're going to come up with some internal solutions, and we can look at that. If it's a minor league arm to add to the mix, and that might be necessary because the next person I'm going to talk about, then maybe it's Carl Edwards Jr. I wouldn't be surprised at a roster move today to add somebody to the mix. But they were able to get through yesterday. Who'd they use yesterday? They used Keegan Thompson, then lighter than Neris.
Yep.
That means Yency Almonte is fresh today.
And he's been really,
really
good.
He's been really good and has been a high leverage guy. It means Neris is available again for a one inning stint because he's fine for two in a row. It means Palencia is back and available today, whether you feel good about him or not.
Ask Dan Bernstein.
Well, he can't. But this year, Craig Counsell can.
He can.
Here's the sad thing I must report as you're thinking about what to do. And there's other options at, in the minors. Porter Hodge is a righty on the 40-man. I like the kid that you pointed out to me the other day, Sean. Arias down at Double A. Michael Arias?
Yeah, he's got nasty stuff. Mick Gillespie's really high on him.
Nasty, nasty sinker. He's on the 40-man roster, so it would not predicate a different kind of move. And he's got a sidearm delivery. Maybe he's not quite ready, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him. And there will be a trade. I know you see Luis Arraez go to the Padres, and a lot of you out there are like, hey, can't the Cubs then make a deal for a reliever? Look, the Marlins are selling. And yes, the Cubs could, and maybe they will. We'll see. We're now more than a month in. The Marlins have declared themselves a seller. They've got some arms down there. You can start scouring that that bullpen and those stats on the year and think about who you might like, if anybody. But you can solve some things internally, and you've got some options. And I do believe once the rotation is stocked with Justin Steele, who we're expecting to have on Monday, and Kyle Hendricks when he comes back, then you've got the options to be in a six-man and give Shota his rest, you know, or leave Wesneski as an option, and Ben Brown will go to the bullpen. I really believe that's the way this is going to go. And then all of a sudden, that is another big-time weapon that's on the roster right now that just slides over. And he might be able to slide over very soon. The fact that he's throwing a bullpen today is very interesting because this would have been the side day. And I thought maybe with Steele coming back tomorrow, Brown could be in the bullpen as soon as today. Apparently not throwing a bullpen. So he will make his next scheduled start. That's all well and good, but within, you know, a couple of weeks here, a week, maybe less, I don't know, Ben Brown of the bullpen would not surprise me. But it's not a guarantee, it's just my current theory. Here's the problem. I believe that Keegan Thompson, sadly, is toast. I don't like to say it. I like him as a dude. I like him as a pitcher. But we've now seen a few different times what can happen with Keegan. I mean, if you trace the history, Keegan early on as a bulk guy was a godsend, and it was really cool. And then Keegan started getting used in very specific roles. There was a moment where he was a closer. I always forget the date, but I remember when he was a closer and he just absolutely imploded and the sweat was pouring down. Sean, you remember that game?
Yeah.
Was it in the Marlins series last year?
Yeah. That was his last stint up here before he got called up again. And you know,
it was the Marlins series after a great start last year when it was like, oh boy, no, there's issues. And it was like, oh no. And there's some personal just anxiety. Yesterday, the body language was horrific on Keegan Thompson. It was horrific.
Wasn't it Ross that said in the start last year, like he knew from the first pitch he had to be out?
Yeah.
You can just kind of feel it with him, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, and that's not to say you can't get that stuff under control, but it is now a couple different stints, a couple different chances with a big minor league stint down there in the middle. And here is Keegan with the bumpy body language. And in a game where you're up, was it 5-0 at that point? And you just got to, you know, throw strikes, get some, you know, weak contact. And he just got absolutely rocked and kept coming over the plate and walking guys. Oof, man, it was rough. It was really rough. And I don't, Keegan Thompson does not appear trustworthy right now. And it bums me out to say so. And I have to say that coming in, I thought maybe this was his last chance with the Cubs on the big league level to prove something. And now I'm concerned. So I don't know when or if he gets more chances with the aforementioned options that are down there. The one other thing I got to say is that Dansby Swanson is slumping in every phase of the game, not just at the plate. In the field, there were a couple that got through him yesterday. Did any one of them get changed to an error? I think they both might have ended up as infield hits.
I think they're both infield hits.
Nico had one that got changed to an error, and sadly, rightfully so. Dansby deserved an error. There was a play, it was on the throwing error by Talkman that allowed the run to score in the ninth against Neris, where Dansby's got to block that ball. That's a throw coming into second. And he's so good fundamentally. He's brilliant fundamentally and so smooth. Something is up. Something has been off. And I don't know what it is. Did you see the final throw to Horner for the last out of the game? It's a force out at second. It's a tentative throw by Dansby. And then there seemed to be palpable relief on the face and in the body language of him as he and Nico kind of gathered to celebrate the win. Was not much of a celebration between the two of them because it was like a, whew, man, ooh. So something's going on with Dansby, and I don't know what it is. Look, one other question, and I haven't done the research yet, but let's do it during the show. How many starting pitchers have been allowed to throw 115 pitches on the year? Because I want to push Jameson Taillon and Javier Assad when they look good and they look ready to give you more. I loved seeing Wesneski into the seventh on Friday, and that was partially out of necessity because so many relievers were down. There was not a lot of opportunity for others. Wesneski went 6 1/3, but Taillon went 6 and threw 99 pitches. Taillon is a guy I would think that maybe you can push to 115. So give him another inning. Let him start. That's me, though. I'm in an odd spot. Have I become the old dude who hates the groupthink about in no way you push a pitcher past 100 pitches or no way you allow somebody to see the order the third time through? I thought Taillon was great yesterday, and he's been great for four starts now. Sneaky spot start pickup by me in fantasy baseball yesterday. Worked out quite well.
Oh, okay.
But Taillon, well, because I watched him against the Mets, man. Dude is dealing all of his pitches to all of the quadrants. He knows what he's doing. Gets swings and misses when he needs it. Pitches to weak contact when he wants it. Very impressive moment for Jameson Taillon. Good for Cubs fans to see. I'm going to say 115 pitches on the year. It's under 5 starting pitchers who've done that. I would bet. So it just doesn't happen anymore. But I did wonder if it could happen. Here's the main thing. The biggest takeaway of the day is that the Brewers are very good. They're clean. They're young. They're aggressive. They play fundamentally very well. And I've always talked about as a team playing clean. Cliff Floyd at Marquee, whose work I enjoy so much, gave us this on Friday postgame about the Milwaukee Brewers.
You cannot allow guys to just get in the scoring position. Now, you can give up hits, and hits are part of the game. But when you're not paying attention to details Albert wasn't doing, then it allows guys getting to score position to score with a lousy little hit, you know, that's going to fall in somewhere. So all these little things are going to beat you, especially against a button-up team like the Brewers are.
The button-up team. There we go. And as a guy who himself likes to wear my button-downs buttoned all the way to the top with that top-button swag, as I found a style I liked in 1989, and I'm not giving it up, thanks for asking. I'll be wearing that, by the way, on television later today twice. I'm on NBC Sports Final. Is that the name of the show? I forget what it is. On Sunday nights with Layla Rahimi. And I'll also be on Fox. I'll be on the Sports Zone with Lou Kanellis on Fox tonight, double dipping. But you'll see that button down with the top button swag. I like to think that when I do that, I look like a button-up guy. But anyway, Cliff Floyd saying the Brewers are a button-up team. You got to play your best ball. That was about Adbert letting three guys steal a base on Friday, and they all scored on little singles. But Cubs did not play button-up yesterday, man. That was not clean. They were lucky to get out of there with a win. And the Brewers are a button-up team. We'll talk about that more with Tim Dillard, their pre- and post-man at 940. Right now, we throw open the phone lines for your calls. And the phone lines will be open all day, all morning, between now and 1245. Check back in every once in a while between guests. I'll let you know when we will have call time if you want to and you don't get in here in the first slate. Looking forward to a very action-packed, fun show. So much to come. Your phone lines next at 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And today, the Cubs and Brewers will conclude their series at Wrigley Field. Pregame coverage starts right here at 1245 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 1:20. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. It's Matt Spiegel with you on a Sunday morning on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying!
Strike three called. Black is out on strikes. Tyone making some really good pitches. It's one of those days, Ron, where it seems like he's making better pitches to left-handed batters than to righties.
You know, his starts have been, you know, he's kind of matching Shota, frankly, like with his starts. I mean, they've been every bit as good. It's been fun to watch. He's really in control, and his command is excellent. I thought he did a wonderful job with the running game today. And just executing multiple pitches, and the hitter's got a lot to defend with the amount of pitches he's making them cover and the command he's pitching with.
That's Craig Counsell on Jameson Taillon. Six innings of two-hit ball yesterday, seven Ks. Two walks. The ERA now stands at 1.13. On the year, in the four starts, 24 innings, just 16 hits and five walks. That's a whip below one with the 16 Ks. The man is pitching very, very well. One of the reasons, he said that in spring training, he kind of reinvented his pitch mix.
You know, I don't have like premier stuff. I feel like I've got good enough stuff to compete in the zone, but I also feel like I need to mix and mix areas and keep hitters guessing and looking kind of all over the place and stuff. So, we've been doing a good job with that and game planning and kind of figuring out the areas we want to live in, the areas we want to stay away from, pitches we want to really lean on certain days and stuff. So, the pitch mix has been good. And as I've gotten a little older, I feel like I've just like kind of reinvented myself with the pitch mix. It used to just be all fastball, curveball, and now, you know, some backdoor cutters. There's a sweeper in there, like just doing some different things.
That's awesome. That's Jameson Taillon. And what's interesting is, like, you look around the league and almost everybody is throwing more off speed or at least, you know, more funky stuff. So even though you're like, whoa, you got to lean on the fastball, got to lean on the fastball, got to lean on the fastball. Not necessarily. Tyone's got a lot of different pitches, and he's using a lot of different pitches. Thank you to Scott from Davenport, the great Scott Lindholm, for sending me the link. I wondered, how many guys in baseball can you push to 115 pitches these days? How many people have done it even this year? Because Tyone was at 99 after six, and I was like, you know, shouldn't 115 be doable at this point for a guy who's been a horse for the most part? I mean, the answer is one. One pitcher has reached 115, and that would be Chris Bassett of the Blue Jays. And
I was going to say, the only one I could find was Cease at 110.
Yeah,
on my end.
Cease, 110. Ranger Suarez, 112. I believe that's in his complete game shutout, his dominance. Kevin Gausman up at 112. Young Michael King of the Padres at 109. I mean, that's it. There's only been four guys at 110. on the year.
I've got the pitches per game ratings here. It looks like Hunter Green, Zach Wheeler are the only ones above 100. Eric Fetty, though, 95.4 on that list, tied for 7.
Yeah, I like Eric Fetty. Good yesterday until he was not against the Cardinals. We'll talk some White Sox at the top of the hour. Crazy, crazy day. A three-hour rain delay followed by, I think it was 59 seconds of action to end just that about, game.
Yeah.
Something like that. And John Brebbia, hilarious, talking about the rain. That is an entertaining guy. I'd like to talk to John Brebbia. Let's talk to Bob in Arlington Heights. Callers, we're getting to you right now. Tim Dillard in about 10 minutes. It is Bob in Arlington Heights on 670 The Score. Hey, Bob.
Good morning. Good morning, Speak. I prefaced this when I talked to Sean. I said, I'm not sure if 9:30 on Sunday is too early for blasphemy, but is it too soon to maybe explore the chemistry between Council and Tommy Hotovy? Because my analogy was, you know, you had a refrigerator case full of milk cartons that had freshness dates that were nowhere near their sell-by date, and all of a sudden, all of them go bad at 3:15 the same day. Something's going on.
What's going? All the pitchers have gone bad on the same day, like spoiled milk. Is that where we are, Bob?
I have to be careful because I'm in concussion protocol from banging my head against the wall every time he brings in a reliever.
But, oh, you know. God, that's hilarious. No, see, I think some of the relievers have been good, and some of them are up and some of them are down. I mean, obviously, he inherited Tommy Hotovy, but he inherited an entire pitching infrastructure, which has done a pretty good job overall. So I don't know about anything like that. What I do know is this. Baseball, it has a problem, which is it has had before and is only worsening, which is that the middle relief that you end up going to, usually in the fifth, the sixth, sometimes the seventh, after starters are not being pushed, a lot of those guys are not good enough. Not every team has good enough dudes there. Considering that your closer is reserved and your two other high leverage arms that you really like to get through the eighth and maybe the seventh are usually reserved. You end up looking at what Madden used to call the middle closer, or, you know, that first guy out. I think Mark Leiter Jr. ought to be the first guy out when the matchups allow. I like Mark Leiter Jr. as the first guy out, especially if there's a couple lefties in there. Obviously that's what Council's targeting. It's all very matchup specific and I get it. But man, it's so often that seems to be the flashpoint for when a game falls apart. This is John in Logan Square on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. What's up, John?
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Really quick, I liked your point about Tyone throwing more pitches. He was in a groove, and he's not a guy who's throwing 99, you know, with a lot of arm action. His mechanics are very good. You know, the third time around the batting order statistics, I think, are even more about the offense getting into a groove than it is a pitcher kind of falling apart. So I think the experiment with that a little bit more would be really, really great. And, you know, I was panicking at the end of April about the bullpen, but I, you know, when these starters come back and when we're healthy, because some of these guys are going to step down, they'll take up bullpen spots, and I think they'll be okay. And the Cubs, if they're going to trade, should probably trade for some offense somewhere. Personally.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the call. Yeah, you know, Bellinger could be back very soon. Maybe no rehab stint for Bellinger, like just hanging around with the team. Okay, you ready to go? Here we go. Which makes all the sense in the world to me. So that's exciting. And that will help put things kind of back in order a little bit offensively. But there are some dudes who got to get going, man. Yan Gomes has looked bad. Dansby Swanson is just, whew. Something's going on with Dansby. Something is very tentative and slow with Dansby, and I don't know what it is. I've never seen him like this, certainly. He's only been here a short time, and he's been a paragon of consistency. Maybe this happens every once in a while. I don't know. Can you slump defensively? If you slump offensively, is he bringing that out to the field? I wouldn't ordinarily think that.
I think of all the guys, that wouldn't be the case, right?
You'd think, but it sure looks that way.
What do you think of the Nico getting the day at shortstop? Do you think that was a day off for Swanson?
Yeah, I think I think it was just a blow. Just giving the man a blow.
Sure.
Texter says Cubs pitching splits this season. The starters have a 3.24 ERA, fourth in baseball. Relievers 23rd in baseball and 4.67. The numbers back up exactly how it has felt. And I also noticed this the other day on Friday when I did the topic, or maybe it was Thursday. Hell, maybe it was even Wednesday. Their starters had thrown the fewest innings of any team that had played that number of games. At the time, it was 30 games, and no team that had played 30 games had starters throwing fewer innings. Now, look, they've had injuries. They've had spot starts with Brown and Wisniewski, or, you know, essentially bulk guys getting spot starts. So it's just interesting. But it is an organizational philosophy that is a groupthink around the game, so it's not super Cubs specific as much as I want it to be. Squeeze in one more. Brad is on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, good morning. I'm out in South Carolina listening on Odyssey, so I was a little behind on when I jumped in the car. But so Carl Edwards is on my mind as far as wanting him to come up. I don't have any concussion protocol like Bob. But the other thing is, did you I wanted to mention Caleb Williams is 1-0 coming to the Cubs now.
Yeah.
So that's a good start.
Yeah. Caleb Williams and lots of young Bears there yesterday. I tweeted earlier in the game a picture from the spot where I was at Wrigley yesterday, and I was like, oh, what a perfect day. And my partner, Monday through Friday, Danny Parkins, tweeted at me and said, oh, you're there to see Caleb. That's smart. And I retweeted that and said, always working, baby. Always working. Leave it to Danny to make Cubs Brewers about Caleb. But Caleb made it about Caleb. Caleb had a good time. And he saw a really good game on a really fun, sunny day.
That was cool to see. It was cool to see.
I thought it was cool. I thought it was very, very cool. He's somebody who gets discussed on other shows, but not as much here because I will not allow it to derail our baseball conversation. Later on in the show, James Fegan on the White Sox. That'll happen around noon. Ben Brown of the Cubs will join us in the 11 o'clock hour. In the 10 o'clock hour, we'll talk about that crazy and chaotic White Sox game. We will take lots of your phone calls in the 10 o'clock hour. You'll get a team of the moment. You'll get proper respect for a baseball legend. Damn it. But coming up next, Tim Dillard of the Brewers pre and post on this series and all things Cubs Brewers. It speaks with you on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Did it? Nice work to try to get back into this ball game. And here's the pitch.
Holy cow.
And a fly ball will hit the left field. And the pitcher, Tim Dillard, has just gone yard. And look at that Sky Sox bullpen. Those guys are going nuts. They are going nuts.
They
wow.
Love it. And he's apparently a pretty popular guy, as we mentioned. There wasn't anything funny about this, though. He just tattooed it, man. It was.
There's no doubt about it.
Seriously tagged. And, you know, you had to figure, hey, you got to challenge. You got to challenge this pitcher here with two outs and see if he can swing the bat. I think you got an answer that you didn't like.
A Tim Dillard home run from the 2016 Colorado Springs Sky Sox. Popular guy, he's funny, but there's nothing funny about that. That's right. Tim Dillard goes yard, and he joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. How many home runs in your baseball life overall, you think, Tim?
I have no idea. I didn't hit that many in high school or college, but I got three in professional baseball. But yeah, I'm glad you didn't try to trick anybody. That was definitely a AAA home run. It was a day game in New Orleans. So definitely not the big leagues.
Understood. Yeah, no, we didn't try to trick anybody, but wanted to give you something glorious to ride into the interview on.
Followed up by Glory Days.
Yeah, exactly.
That song. That's what I feel like.
Tim Dillard is the pregame and postgame analyst on Brewers Live telecast, and he does some color on some of the games as well. I loved when your colleague over at Marquee, Cliff Floyd, on Friday called the Brewers a button-up team. Like, I've always talked about it as like a team that plays clean or whatever. Like, the Brewers, this team still does things very, very clean and smart fundamentally, don't they? Is that about Pat Murphy? Is it about the organization? Where does this come from, Tim?
Yeah, I think it's the whole way down. I think Matt Arnold puts together a club that is not just athletic, but good at what they do. And it's all about getting them in front of the coaching staff and developing them. But yes, Pat Murphy loves the fundamentals of the game. What to do, where to hit the ball in certain situations. It's kind of a dying art. At least it's been probably the last 10 or 15 years. Like, hey, take the bat, rip it. It doesn't matter if there's a guy on second and he could be the tying or winning run. If you hit a rocket to third base, you can say, okay, I hit the ball hard. It's like, yeah, but you didn't do anything. You didn't get him over. And I think this team has an emphasis on that. So a button-up club, like, that's a great line because it is. They're very well-rounded. We were just talking about Oliver Dunn. He was in Double-A last year. He only has 7 games at Triple-A. And now suddenly this year he's in the big leagues and he took away a couple of extra base hits already in the Cubs series. So it just kind of shows you that they grab guys and they put them in the best position possible to let them excel.
Hey, Tim, I think I heard, it's more than 10 players who have made their major league debut for the Brewers this year. It's a lot and still they're good. That's still you're good, I should say. I mean, that's a remarkable thing to have that many young players comfortable and contributing.
Yeah, that's very strange. I don't know if 10 is correct or not. A good color analyst would know that, but I don't know that.
Hey, a good host, would bring it up. A good host would bring it up with full knowledge. I heard Pat Murphy on the station the other day, and I meant to write it down. So, like, we can point that one at me, and more so than at you. Hey, I don't know when Devin Williams is coming back, but Tyler McGill, Trevor McGill, he looks pretty closer-ish, doesn't he, right now?
Absolutely. I mean, but they're kind of shuffling the closer role just on matchups, which gives you flexibility. You know, we've seen Trevor come in and, you know, early in the game, maybe the 6th or 7th, and we've seen Piatt's close. We've seen Peguero get some closing opportunities, Uribe. It's all about matchups. And so McGill's kind of settled in there. But yes, he does have the closing stuff. If you saw him the other day, you saw the closed off stance on the mound, reminds you of like a Josh Hader. And then 100 at the top of the zone or a knuckle curveball that just breaks off the table. That is reminiscent of like a John Axford, right? He was one of the first, I feel like, him and Grant Balfour of like fastballs at the top of the zone and then break off a curve down. So they're kind of tunneled that way. And you know, McGill has it. He has either, like you say, baseball family. His brother plays for the Mets. He's competitive too. And just a 6'8" tree out on the mound, the ball comes out of the center field bleachers. That's what you're getting from this guy.
So you talked about it there, like the high fastball and like the 12-6 breaker as it goes around the league. What do you think of like the state of pitching in this league? You know, and what I really mean is this idea that starters don't get pushed and middle relievers have to be trusted. It makes me insane, Tim, because no disrespect to relievers like yourself, sir, but like I don't feel like most teams have a good enough middle relief to trust more than asking a starter to learn how to go deeper in the game. It makes me nuts.
Yeah, I do have a shirt that says relievers are people too. You know, that's I got a couple of those in the clubhouse. No, I mean, I get it. I came from, you know, growing up in baseball. My dad played before I was born. He coached my entire life. You know, and my dad played for the Cubs too. I don't really say that a lot in Wisconsin, but I'll say that on your show. And you know, the idea of like you're going to be a pitcher. Okay, we'll go deep in the ball game. And how do you do that? And so coming up the ladder in the minor leagues with the Brewers, I would go deep into ball games. You know, I had several complete games. I would throw into the 7th. If I didn't get in the 7th inning, I felt like a failure. That was just me personally. But I didn't strike out a lot of people. Also didn't walk a lot of people. But there was other guys that would go 5 innings and strike out 10 or 12 and walk 4 or 5. And those guys got spun up the ladder because they were like, okay, well, you know, we love strikeouts. And so I never got my shot in the big leagues as far as a starter because it wasn't very high valued. And so you fast forward over the decades, couple decades, and now suddenly if you get a starter that goes 5 innings, you know, everybody's like, yay, But baseball, I don't think, wants that, because that puts tons of pressure on the bullpen. And what do? You suddenly have to send down a bullpen guy who's done well just so you can call up an arm that's fresh, eat up innings. And so it goes all the way to the way they train and everything. If you ever listen or watch Foul Territory with those guys, Pruszynski,
yep.
I'm trying to think, Eric Kratz, like they had Dr. Meister, who's out of Arlington, who's one of the best, you know, that's who everyone's going to for their shoulder and elbows right now. And he hit it the nail on the head, how there's all these factors on all these guys pitching. That's why you're seeing all these injuries. And then the side effect of that is, hey, we got to have people in the bullpen that can, you know, 3 to 4 guys that can go multiple innings. And it's just not sustainable over 162 games. It's not going to be. So I don't know. That's my soapbox.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm right, but it's just kind of what I see.
Hey, Tim, you mentioned your dad, who I remember because my big brother was a huge Red Sox fan in the mid-70s, and your dad played with Denny Doyle and Rick Burleson and Butch Hobson in that infield. But he later was a Cub. He was briefly a White Sox player, and he started managing in the White Sox minor leaguers. So how does he identify these days? To which major league team does he identify with the most these days?
I think he just watches the Brewers a lot because sometimes I'll be doing the game. But in our household, one of my brothers was born when he was with the Tigers. Another was born when he was with the Cubs. And I was born when he was coaching with the White Sox. So for us, it was just about good baseball. We had WGN, and I was the remote control, right? Back in those days, you didn't have a remote control. My little brother, that's what I was. And I don't know. Just for him, he always tells these stories, still does. When he was with the Red Sox, he had teammates like Carlton Fisk and Yastrzemski, Jim Rice. Played behind Louis Tiant, who to this day he says was the most fun to play behind. Like when he was one of those enforcers, when he went to the mound, it's like, you better pick up your game because this guy's given everything he has. Love Louis Tiant. And so he has all these teammates that, and that's what baseball is about for him. So he loves watching good baseball. I'm named after Tim Blackwell, who was teammates with him with the Red Sox and then later with the Cubs. So
wow.
Just to show that if we're a baseball family, we couldn't get away from it. Thank God I was kind of good at it for a little while.
Wow. He
loves good baseball. And I think that's what people want to see now. The athleticism. That's why baseball put all these rules together, because they want to show off what these people can do besides let's just shift everybody and swing for the fence. They're putting incentives in there to show that they're fast, they're athletic, and they know how to play. And that's what I love to see.
I want to hang out with you and your dad and hear Luis Tiant stories. Because El Tiante, that's as good as it gets. All right, last thing for you, Tim. What do you think of these Cubs? Now, having watched them up close in this series, what do you think of this team as they stand right now as a division contender?
They got guys that can hit home runs, and their starting pitching is lights out. I don't know if the Brewers have even scored off a starting pitcher in these first two games. And that's with having, 4 to 5 starters on the shelf right now? Pretty impressive, honestly. They've had a few miscues in the field, very strange. I think that'll get polished out. I think it's just because it's early. I know one of them there was a relay that probably should have gone home, but for whatever reason, Swanson was lining up the third, and the third baseman, I forgot who was at third, maybe Morel, but didn't get in line. That happens. You got guys not playing. Morel's just now playing third base. He's going to hit a ton of homers, but he's also going to learn third base and get better as the season goes on. But, yeah, for the most part, I mean, they're going to put up runs. And it's going to be about the starting pitching, which seems good. Right now, the bullpen, to me, is what has struggled. Clearly, the Brewers have done well against, the bullpen arms. But everybody has a problem right now. You can't look at one team in baseball and go, they're perfect. And then a month into the season, yes, it can make or break your season, but as long as you hang tight, things will come around. Injuries, those guys get healthy and come back. So, yeah, I think it's good. I think what we've seen these last two games is really good baseball on the field, and with a lot going on, not just being the NL Central, but, of course, with Craig Counsell and Pat Murphy. It's a fun one.
Agreed. Thank you, Tim Dillard. Pleasure, man. Have a great game today.
Yep, thank you so much.
You got it. At Tim Dillard, Brewers pre and post. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. We're going to reset and open the phone lines back up for you, the Sox fans, as well as the Cub fans this next hour. Ben Brown later on, James Fegan later on Hit and Run on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hit and Run, Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Morrell drives one in the air. Deep left center. Get out the tape measure. Long gone.
But they come in bunches, partner.
Way up into the bleachers in left center. And the Cubs lead 4-0. And the punch just got a little bit bigger. The 0-2 pitch on the way. Ground ball to short. Swanson's got it. Throw to second. Cubs win. The Cubs win the ball game. 6-4 on the fielder's choice. And the Cubs have evened up this series at one victory apiece. In many ways, a very typical Cubs-Brewers game, Ron.
Yeah.
Lee, and that's a base hit into center field over the head of Gorman. Two runs off the mound, and Jimenez comes in to tie the game. Corey Lee picks up two ribbies, but 2-1 to Pham, and he delivers into left. It's the White Sox taking a one-run lead here in the 10th. Tommy Pham, he does it again. All of a sudden, Busch Stadium with some energy again. Bases loaded. Cardinals down to their last strike. Ring him up! Strike three! And Tanner Banks comes in, gets the strikeout. And the White Sox, after a 3-hour and 3-minute rain delay, win it 6-5 in the 10th.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Sing it. Ba-da-ba-bum, ba-da-bum, ba-da-bum. There's bass trombones in there. We're pretty sure. We've talked to our brass playing friends. Need somebody with much more familiarity with the lower register. Me, I'm just a trumpet player. Still got the trumpet I bought with my bar mitzvah money. It's been a long time, but it's still there. Break it out every once in a while. But that is not why you called. Good morning, everybody. It is Hit and Run, the Score's venerable, not vulnerable, but venerable baseball show. We talk everything in this two-team town. We get to do whatever we want in a very interesting baseball city, do we not? We are on from 9 until 12:45 today as Cubs pregame will come your way. Cubs Brewers for the finale of a very hotly contested, interesting series between the two top teams in the National League Central. Cubs now just a game back of Milwaukee. Fun to talk about like it matters here on May the 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo to everyone. The only two teams over 500 in the NL Central are the Cubs and the Brewers. Meanwhile, in the AL Central, everybody's over 500 except the White Sox. Even the Tigers at 18-15. It's the only division in baseball with four teams over 500. In that division, you have a plus 45 run differential Kansas City Royals, who are tied with the Orioles for the best run differential in the American League, and the Guardians at plus 40. And neither of those are the team of the moment. That's coming up. We do team of the moment every week here on Hit and Run, whatever team around baseball has us thinking and talking. We will check in on the leaderboard. We're going to look at a couple different positions on the leaderboard and sort of talk through where the Cubs and Sox stand and what it means for the rest of baseball. You'll hear a snippet of the PBP, the play-by-play Voices of Baseball podcast I do. Scott Fransky, the Phillies post, Phillies radio guy, is the guest this week. My God, he's awesome. So that was fun. And then there's a few guests along the way. First up, later this hour, Tim Dillard, the Milwaukee Brewers pre- and post-man, who is a very entertaining human, pitched in MLB. His dad pitched for the Cubs. We'll talk to Tim Dillard at 9:40 about the Brewers and the Cubs. Ben Brown, the Cubs starting pitcher, is he a future closer? Who knows, people? But either way, Ben Brown is throwing a bullpen this morning and is going to join us after that. We were originally going to talk to him at 10, but then the show was thrown into chaos when we found out that Ben Brown will join us at 11:30. My God, what does that mean? What are we going to do? We're going to panic. We're going to freak out. And we're going to ask James Fegan if he can move to noon, which he can. So look, on the bonus hit and run, we get James Fegan from Sox Machine at noon? Come on! Does it get any better than this?
It's all Ruben, man. He comes up and the good guests show up, huh?
The associate producer is here to do his job. His options were to hang in here for segment one and listen to Dad Monologue, or go and hang out with Sean Sears in the control room. He said, can I just go out in the lobby over there? And I said, no, you are part of the show, sir. This is what you do. You're here. You're working.
Can I go on the line?
No, Sean, we need you. Sean Sears, you're essential. Sean and I have some fun stuff prepared for you today. Little opens for the guests, of course, but also later on today, we're going to give proper respect to a Chicago baseball legend. And I'll let those of you who have an idea wonder who that might be. But let's talk about relevant and important baseball in this town. Electricity yesterday on a perfect baseball day. Lucky enough to be there in some good seats close with my wife and two friends in from out of town. Minnesota Twins fans in from out of town wearing their Twins jerseys. Your thoughts on friends from out of town who wear their favorite team's jersey to the ballpark when that team is not playing. They were not in Brewers jerseys, so, you know, but they were not in Cubs jerseys. They were representing Twins jerseys. It threw me off, frankly. But I respect the love and the loyalty. We had a great time on an absolutely gorgeous day. And it's fun to always get the perspective of those who haven't necessarily had a chance to sit close at Wrigley, because it's different than sitting close anywhere else, except maybe Fenway. It's so low, and you're right there, and it is a different kind of game. You really get a sense for a lot of body language, a lot of personal dynamics, a lot of individual athleticism, and that's going to be part of this conversation, because I'll give you a few things on yesterday's Cubs game, which was a very fun win. And you know about some of the highlights, which you heard on the way in, Christopher Morel's home run and Patrick Wisdom with a home run. Let me say this off the top. That man earned some playing time and some big at-bats yesterday with what I thought was the biggest at-bat of the game in the eighth inning. They need an insurance run, and Patrick Wisdom is up with a man at third and less than two outs. Got to shorten up, even though you've homered earlier in the game, even though your thing is the power guy. This is where you need the B-hack. You need to shorten up, and here's what Wisdom did.
Here comes the 2-2 now. On the way.
Line drive, base hit to center field. Coming in to score, Michael Busch. Patrick Wisdom delivers. Nice.
That's a real good at bat by Patrick Wisdom. And, you know, for years we have watched and known and dissected when Cubs power bats are unable to shorten up and do what they need to get some contact in a big moment. He did. And that was an insurance run. And of course it mattered, because Hector Neris is a modern day Rod Beck. El Tirador is the shooter in Spanish. We will give that to Hector Neris. Because he also doesn't have the overpowering fastball. What he does have is cojones. And so did Rod Beck. My goodness. But there was a moment yesterday where Neris came back and was throwing high splitters. I think it was to Contreras. He threw a high splitter at like 83. 83. Might have been 84. But that wouldn't be nearly as much fun to say. So it's eight, about high splitter, and Contreras swung under it. Fastball maxes out around 94. That splitter is funky, though, and he made some hitters look silly as he struck them out after giving up walks, which he always seems to do. Once he finds control, he's pretty darn good. But, man, he's stressful, and the Cubs need some bullpen help. We know they do. And it underpins all of your thoughts on the Cubs, right? But here's the thing. You know they're going to go get it. You know they are. They're going to come up with some internal solutions, and we can look at that. If it's a minor league arm to add to the mix, and that might be necessary because the next person I'm going to talk about, then maybe it's Carl Edwards Jr. I wouldn't be surprised at a roster move today to add somebody to the mix. But they were able to get through yesterday. Who'd they use yesterday? They used Keegan Thompson, then lighter than Neris.
Yep.
That means Yency Almonte is fresh today.
And he's been really, really good.
He's been really good and has been a high leverage guy. It means Neris is available again for a one-inning stint because he's fine for two in a row. It means Palencia is back and available today, whether you feel good about him or not.
Ask Dan Bernstein.
Well, he can't. But this year, Craig Counsell can.
He can.
Here's the sad thing I must report as you're thinking about what to do. And there's other options at, in the minors. Porter Hodge is a righty on the 40-man. I like the kid that you pointed out to me the other day, Sean. Arias down at AA. Michael Arias?
Yeah, he's got nasty stuff. Mick Gillespie's really high on him.
Nasty, nasty sinker. He's on the 40-man roster, so it would not predicate a different kind of move. And he's got a sidearm delivery. Maybe he's not quite ready, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him. And there will be a trade. I know you see Luis Arraez go to the Padres, and a lot of you out there are like, hey, can't the Cubs then make a deal for a reliever? Look, the Marlins are selling. And yes, the Cubs could, and maybe they will. We'll see. We're now more than a month in. The Marlins have declared themselves a seller. They've got some arms down there. You can start scouring that that bullpen and those stats on the year and think about who you might like, if anybody. But you can solve some things internally, and you've got some options. And I do believe once the rotation is stocked with Justin Steele, who we're expecting to have on Monday, and Kyle Hendricks when he comes back, then you've got the options to be in a six-man and give Shota his rest, you know, or leave Wesneski as an option, and Ben Brown will go to the bullpen. I really believe that's the way this is going to go. And then all of a sudden, that is another big-time weapon that's on the roster right now that just slides over. And he might be able to slide over very soon. The fact that he's throwing a bullpen today is very interesting because this would have been the side day. And I thought maybe with Steele coming back tomorrow, Brown could be in the bullpen as soon as today. Apparently not throwing a bullpen. So he will make his next scheduled start. That's all well and good, but within, you know, a couple of weeks here, a week, maybe less, I don't know, Ben Brown of the bullpen would not surprise me. But it's not a guarantee, it's just my current theory. Here's the problem. I believe that Keegan Thompson, sadly, is toast. I don't like to say it. I like him as a dude. I like him as a pitcher. But we've now seen a few different times what can happen with Keegan. I mean, if you trace the history, Keegan early on as a bulk guy was a godsend, and it was really cool. And then Keegan started getting used in very specific roles. There was a moment where he was a closer. I always forget the date, but I remember when he was a closer and he just absolutely imploded and the sweat was pouring down. Sean, you remember that game?
Yeah.
Was it in the Marlins series last year?
Yeah. That was his last stint up here before he got called up again. And, you know,
it was the Marlins series after a great start last year when it was like, oh boy, no, there's issues. And it was like, oh no. And there's some personal just anxiety. Yesterday, the body language was horrific on Keegan Thompson. It was horrific.
wasn't it Ross that said in the start last year, like he knew from the first pitch he had to be out?
Yeah.
You can just kind of feel it with him, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, and that's not to say you can't get that stuff under control, but it is now a couple different stints, a couple different chances, with a big minor league stint down there in the middle. And here is Keegan with the bumpy body language, and in a game where you're up, was it 5-0 at that point? And you just gotta, you know, throw strikes, get some, you know, weak contact. And he just got absolutely rocked and kept coming over the plate and walking guys. Oof. Man, it was rough. It was really rough. And Keegan Thompson does not appear trustworthy right now. And it bums me out to say so. And I have to say that coming in, I thought maybe this was his last chance with the Cubs on the big league level to prove something. And now I'm concerned. So I don't know when or if he gets more chances with the aforementioned options that are down there. The one other thing I got to say is that Dansby Swanson is slumping in every phase of the game, not just at the plate. In the field, there were a couple that got through him yesterday. Did any one of them get changed to an error? I think they both might have ended up as infield hits.
I think they're both infield hits.
Nico had one that got changed to an error, and sadly, rightfully so. Dansby deserved an error. There was a play, it was on the throwing error by Talkman that allowed the run to score in the ninth against Neris, where Dansby's got to block that ball. That's a throw coming into second. And he's so good fundamentally. He's brilliant fundamentally and so smooth. Something is up. Something has been off. And I don't know what it is. Did you see the final throw to Horner for the last out of the game? It's a force out at second. It's a tentative throw by Dansby. And then there seemed to be palpable relief on the face and in the body language of him as he and Nico kind of gathered to celebrate the win. Was not much of a celebration between the two of them because it was like a whoof, man. Ooh. So something's going on with Dansby, and I don't know what it is. Look, one other question, and I haven't done the research yet, but let's do it during the show. How many starting pitchers have been allowed to throw 115 pitches on the year? Because I want to push Jameson Taillon and Javier Assad, when they look good and they look ready to give you more. I loved seeing Wesneski into the seventh on Friday, and that was partially out of necessity because so many relievers were down. There was not a lot of opportunity for others. Wesneski went 6 1/3, but Taillon went 6 and threw 99 pitches. Taillon is a guy I would think that maybe you can push to 115. So give him another inning. Let him start. That's me, though. I'm in an odd spot. Have I become the old dude who hates the group think about in no way you push a pitcher past 100 pitches or no way you allow somebody to see the order the third time through? I thought Taillon was great yesterday, and he's been great for 4 starts now. Sneaky spot start pickup by me in fantasy baseball yesterday. Worked out quite well.
Oh, okay.
But Taillon, because I watched him against the Mets, man. Dude is dealing all of his pitches to all of the quadrants. He knows what he's doing. Gets swings and misses when he needs it. Pitches to weak contact when he wants it. Very impressive moment for Jameson Taillon. Good for Cubs fans to see. I'm going to say 115 pitches on the year. It's under 5 starting pitchers who've done that. I would bet. So it just doesn't happen anymore. But I did wonder if it could happen. Here's the main thing. The biggest takeaway of the day is that the Brewers are very good. They're clean. They're young. They're aggressive. They play fundamentally very well. And I've always talked about as a team playing clean. Cliff Floyd at Marquee, whose work I enjoy so much, gave us this on Friday postgame about the Milwaukee Brewers.
You cannot allow guys to just get in the scoring position. Now, you can give up hits, and hits are part of the game. But when you're not paying attention to details Albert wasn't doing, then it allows guys getting to score position to score with a lousy little hit, you know, that's going to fall in somewhere. So all these little things are going to beat you, especially against a button-up team like the Brewers are.
The button-up team. There we go. And as a guy who himself likes to wear my button-downs buttoned all the way to the top with that top button swag, as I found a style I liked in 1989, and I'm not giving it up, thanks for asking. I'll be wearing that, by the way, on television later today, twice. I'm on NBC Sports Final. Is that the name of the show? I forget what it is. On Sunday nights with Layla Rahimi. And I'll also be on Fox. I'll be on the Sports Zone with Lou Kanellis on Fox tonight, double dipping. But you'll see that button-down with the top button swag. I like to think that when I do that, I look like a button-up guy. But anyway, Cliff Floyd saying the Brewers are a button-up team. You got to play your best ball. That was about Adbert letting three guys steal a base on Friday, and they all scored on little singles. But Cubs did not play button-up yesterday, man. That was not clean. They were lucky to get out of there with a win. And the Brewers are a button-up team. We'll talk about that more with Tim Dillard, their pre- and post-man at 940. Right now, we throw open the phone lines for your calls. And the phone lines will be open all day, all morning, between now and 1245. Check back in every once in a while between guests. I'll let you know when we will have call time if you want to and you don't get in here in the first slate. Looking forward to a very action-packed, fun show. So much to come. Your phone lines next at 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And today, the Cubs and Brewers will conclude their series at Wrigley Field. Pregame coverage starts right here at 1245 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 1:20. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. It's Matt Spiegel with you on a Sunday morning on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying!
Strike three called. Black is out on strikes. Tyone making some really good pitches. It's one of those days, Ron, where it seems like he's making better pitches to left-handed batters than to righties.
You know, his starts have been, you know, he's kind of matching Shota, frankly, like with his starts. I mean, they've been every bit as good. It's been fun to watch. He's really in control, and his command is excellent. I thought he did a wonderful job with the running game today. And just executing multiple pitches, and the hitter's got a lot to defend with the amount of pitches he's making them cover and the command he's pitching with.
That's Craig Counsell on Jameson Taillon's 6 innings of 2-hit ball yesterday, 7 Ks. 2 walks. The ERA now stands at 1.13. On the year, in the 4 starts, 24 innings, just 16 hits and 5 walks. That's a whip below 1 with the 16 Ks. The man is pitching very, very well. One of the reasons, he said that in spring training, he kind of reinvented his pitch mix.
You know, I don't have like premier stuff. I feel like I've got good enough stuff to compete in the zone, but I also feel like I need to mix and mix areas and keep hitters guessing and looking kind of all over the place and stuff. So, we've been doing a good job with that and game planning and kind of figuring out the areas we want to live in, the areas we want to stay away from, pitches we want to really lean on certain days and stuff. So, the pitch mix has been good. And as I've gotten a little older, I feel like I've just like kind of reinvented myself with the pitch mix. It used to just be all fastball, curveball, and now, you know, some backdoor cutters. There's a sweeper in there, like just doing some different things.
That's awesome. That's Jameson Taillon. And what's interesting is, like, you look around the league and almost everybody is throwing more off speed or at least, you know, more funky stuff. So even though you're like, whoa, you got to lean on the fastball, got to lean on the fastball, got to lean on the fastball. Not necessarily. Tyone's got a lot of different pitches, and he's using a lot of different pitches. Thank you to Scott from Davenport, the great Scott Lindholm, for sending me the link. I wondered, how many guys in baseball can you push to 115 pitches these days? How many people have done it even this year? Because Tyone was at 99 after 6, and I was like, you know, shouldn't 115 be doable at this point for a guy who's been a horse for the most part? I mean, the answer is one. One pitcher has reached 115, and that would be Chris Bassett of the Blue Jays. And
I was going to say, the only one I could find was Cease at 110 on my end.
Cease, 110. Ranger Suarez, 112. I believe that's in his complete game shutout, his dominance. Kevin Gausman up at 112. Young Michael King of the Padres at 109. I mean, that's it. There's only been four guys at 110 on the year.
I've got the pitches per game ratings here. It looks like Hunter Green, Zach Wheeler are the only ones above 100. Eric Fetty, though, 95.4 on that list, tied for seven.
Yeah, I like Eric Fetty. Good yesterday until he was not against the Cardinals. We'll talk some White Sox at the top of the hour. Crazy, crazy day. A three-hour rain delay followed by, I think it was 59 seconds of action to end just that about, game.
Yeah.
Something like that. And John Brebbia, hilarious, talking about the rain. That is an entertaining guy. I'd like to talk to John Brebbia. Let's talk to Bob in Arlington Heights. Callers, we're getting to you right now. Tim Dillard in about 10 minutes. It is Bob in Arlington Heights on 670 The Score. Hey, Bob.
Good morning. Good morning, Speak. I prefaced this when I talked to Sean. I said, I'm not sure if 9:30 on Sunday is too early for blasphemy, but is it too soon to maybe explore the chemistry between Council and Tommy Hotovy? Because my analogy was, you know, you had a refrigerator case full of milk cartons that had freshness dates that were nowhere near their sell-by date, and all of a sudden, all of them go bad at 3:15 the same day. Something's going on.
What's going on? All the pitchers have gone bad on the same day, like spoiled milk? Is that where we are, Bob?
I have to be careful because I'm in concussion protocol from banging my head against the wall every time he brings in a reliever.
But, oh, God, that's hilarious. No, see, I think some of the relievers have been good, and some of them are up and some of them are down. I mean, obviously, he inherited Tommy Hotovy, but he inherited an entire pitching infrastructure, which has done a pretty good job overall. So I don't know about anything like that. What I do know is this. Baseball, it has a problem, which is it has had before and is only worsening, which is that the middle relief that you end up going to, usually in the fifth, the sixth, sometimes the seventh, after starters are not being pushed, a lot of those guys are not good enough. Not every team has good enough dudes there, considering that your closer is reserved and your two other high leverage arms that you really like to get through the eighth and maybe the seventh are usually reserved. You end up looking at what Madden used to call the middle closer, or, you know, that first guy out. I think Mark Leiter Jr. ought to be the first guy out when the matchups allow. I like Mark Leiter Jr. as the first guy out, especially if there's a couple lefties in there. Obviously that's what Council's targeting. It's all very matchup specific and I get it. But man, it's so often that seems to be the flashpoint for when a game falls apart. This is John in Logan Square on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. What's up, John?
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Really quick, I liked your point about Tyone throwing more pitches. He was in a groove, and he's not a guy who's throwing 99, you know, with a lot of arm action. His mechanics are very good. You know, the third time around the batting order statistics, I think, are even more about the offense getting into a groove than it is a pitcher kind of falling apart. So I think the experiment with that a little bit more would be really, really great. And, you know, I was panicking at the end of April about the bullpen, but I, you know, when these starters come back and when we're healthy, because some of these guys are going to step down, they'll take up bullpen spots, and I think they'll be okay. And the Cubs, if they're going to trade, should probably trade for some offense somewhere. Personally.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the call. Yeah, you know, Bellinger could be back very soon. Maybe no rehab stint for Bellinger, like just hanging around with the team. Okay, you ready to go? Here we go. Which makes all the sense in the world to me. So that's exciting. And that will help put things kind of back in order a little bit offensively. But there are some dudes who got to get going, man. Yan Gomes has looked bad. Dansby Swanson is just, whew. Something's going on with Dansby. Something is very tentative and slow with Dansby, and I don't know what it is. I've never seen him like this, certainly. He's only been here a short time, and he's been a paragon of consistency. Maybe this happens every once in a while. I don't know. Can you slump defensively? If you slump offensively, is he bringing that out to the field? I wouldn't ordinarily think that.
I think of all the guys, that wouldn't be the case, right?
You'd think, but it sure looks that way.
What do you think of the Nico getting the day at shortstop? Do you think that was a day off for Swanson?
Yeah, I think I think it was just a blow. Just giving the man a blow.
Sure.
Texter says Cubs pitching splits this season. The starters have a 3.24 ERA, fourth in baseball. Relievers 23rd in baseball and 4.67. The numbers back up exactly how it has felt. And I also noticed this the other day on Friday when I did the topic, or maybe it was Thursday. Hell, maybe it was even Wednesday. Their starters had thrown the fewest innings of any team that had played that number of games. At the time, it was 30 games, and no team that had played 30 games had starters throwing fewer innings. Now, look, they've had injuries. They've had spot starts with Brown and Wisniewski, or, you know, essentially bulk guys getting spot starts. So it's just interesting. But it is an organizational philosophy that is a groupthink around the game, so it's not super Cubs specific as much as I want it to be. Squeeze in one more. Brad is on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, good morning. I'm out in South Carolina listening on Odyssey, so I was a little behind on when I jumped in the car. But so Carl Edwards is on my mind as far as wanting him to come up. I don't have any concussion protocol like Bob. But the other thing is, did you I wanted to mention Caleb Williams is 1-0 coming to the Cubs now.
Yeah.
So that's a good start.
Yeah. Caleb Williams and lots of young Bears there yesterday. I tweeted earlier in the game a picture from the spot where I was at Wrigley yesterday, and I was like, oh, what a perfect day. And my partner, Monday through Friday, Danny Parkins, tweeted at me and said, oh, you're there to see Caleb. That's smart. And I retweeted that and said, always working, baby. Always working. Leave it to Danny to make Cubs Brewers about Caleb. But Caleb made it about Caleb. Caleb had a good time. And he saw a really good game on a really fun, sunny day.
That was cool to see. It was cool to see.
I thought it was cool. I thought it was very, very cool. He's somebody who gets discussed on other shows, but not as much here because I will not allow it to derail our baseball conversation. Later on in the show, James Fegan on the White Sox. That'll happen around noon. Ben Brown of the Cubs will join us in the 11 o'clock hour. In the 10 o'clock hour, we'll talk about that crazy and chaotic White Sox game. We will take lots of your phone calls in the 10 o'clock hour. You'll get a team of the moment. You'll get proper respect for a baseball legend. Damn it. But coming up next, Tim Dillard of the Brewers pre and post on this series and all things Cubs Brewers. It speaks with you on Hit and Run on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Did it? Nice work to try to get back into this ball game. And here's the pitch.
Holy cow.
And a fly ball will hit the left field, and the pitcher, Tim Dillard, has just gone yard. And look at that Sky Sox bullpen. Those guys are going nuts. They are going nuts.
Wow. He's apparently a pretty popular guy, as we mentioned. There wasn't anything funny about this, though. He just tattooed it, man. It was.
There's no doubt about it.
Seriously tagged, and, you know, you had to figure, hey, you got to challenge. You got to challenge this pitcher here with two outs and see if he can swing the bat. I think you got an answer that you didn't like.
A Tim Dillard home run from the 2016 Colorado Springs Sky Sox. Popular guy, he's funny, but there's nothing funny about that. That's right. Tim Dillard goes yard, and he joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. How many home runs in your baseball life overall, you think, Tim?
I have no idea. I didn't hit that many in high school or college, but I got three in professional baseball, but yeah, I'm glad you didn't try to trick anybody. That was definitely a AAA home run. It was a day game in New Orleans. So definitely not the big leagues.
Understood. Yeah, no, we didn't try to trick anybody, but wanted to give you something glorious to ride into the interview on.
Followed up by Glory Days.
Yeah, exactly.
That song. That's what I feel like.
Tim Dillard is the pregame and postgame analyst on Brewers Live telecast, and he does some color on some of the games as well. I loved when your colleague over at Marquee, Cliff Floyd, on Friday called the Brewers a button-up team Like, I've always talked about it as like a team that plays clean or whatever. Like, the Brewers, this team still does things very, very clean and smart fundamentally, don't they? Is that about Pat Murphy? Is it about the organization? Where does this come from, Tim?
Yeah, I think it's the whole way down. I think Matt Arnold puts together a club that is not just athletic, but good at what they do. And it's all about getting them in front of the coaching staff and developing them. But yes, Pat Murphy loves the fundamentals of the game. What to do, where to hit the ball in certain situations. It's kind of a dying art. At least it's been probably the last 10 or 15 years. Like, hey, take the bat, rip it. It doesn't matter if there's a guy on second and he could be the tying or winning run. If you hit a rocket to third base, you can say, okay, I hit the ball hard. It's like, yeah, but you didn't do anything. You didn't get him over. And I think this team has an emphasis on that. So a button-up club, like, that's a great line because it is. They're very well-rounded. We were just talking about Oliver Dunn. He was in Double-A last year. He only has 7 games at Triple-A. And now suddenly this year he's in the big leagues and he took away a couple of extra base hits already in the Cubs series. So it just kind of shows you that they grab guys and they put them in the best position possible to let them excel.
Hey, Tim, I think I heard, it's more than 10 players who have made their major league debut for the Brewers this year. It's a lot and still they're good. That's still you're good, I should say. I mean, that's a remarkable thing to have that many young players comfortable and contributing.
Yeah, that's very strange. I don't know if 10 is correct or not. A good color analyst would know that, but I don't know that.
Hey, a good host, would bring it up. A good host would bring it up with full knowledge. I heard Pat Murphy on the station the other day, and I meant to write it down. So, like, we can point that one at me, and more so than at you. Hey, I don't know when Devin Williams is coming back, but Tyler McGill, Trevor McGill, he looks pretty closer-ish, doesn't he, right now?
Absolutely. I mean, but they're kind of shuffling the closer role just on matchups, which gives you flexibility. You know, we've seen Trevor come in and, you know, early in the game, maybe the sixth or seventh, and we've seen Piatt's close. We've seen Peguero get some closing opportunities, Uribe. It's all about matchups. And so McGill's kind of settled in there. But yes, he does have the closing stuff. If you saw him the other day, you saw the closed off stance on the mound, reminds you of like a Josh Hader. And then 100 at the top of the zone or a knuckle curveball that just breaks off the table. That is reminiscent of like a John Axford, right? He was one of the first, I feel like, him and Grant Balfour of like fastballs at the top of the zone and then break off a curve down. So they're kind of tunneled that way. And you know, McGill has it. He has either. Like you say, baseball family, his brother plays for the Mets. He's competitive too. And just a 6'8" tree out on the mound, the ball comes out of the center field bleachers. That's what you're getting from this guy.
So you talked about it there, like the high fastball and like the 12-6 breaker as it goes around the league. What do you think of like the state of pitching in this league? You know, and what I really mean is this idea that starters don't get pushed and middle relievers have to be trusted. It makes me insane, Tim, because no disrespect to relievers like yourself, sir, but like I don't feel like most teams have a good enough middle relief to trust more than asking a starter to learn how to go deeper in the game. It makes me nuts.
Yeah, I do have a shirt that says relievers are people too. You know, that's I got a couple of those in the clubhouse. No, I mean, I get it. I came from, you know, growing up in baseball. My dad played before I was born. He coached my entire life. You know, and my dad played for the Cubs, too. I don't really say that a lot in Wisconsin, but I'll say that on your show. And, you know, the idea of, like, you're going to be a pitcher? Okay, we'll go deep in the ballgame. And how do you do that? And so coming up the ladder in the minor leagues with the Brewers, I would go deep into ballgames. You know, I had several complete games. I would throw into the seventh. If I didn't get in the seventh inning, I felt like a failure. That was just me personally. But I didn't strike out a lot of people. Also didn't walk a lot of people. But there was other guys that would go 5 innings and strike out 10 or 12 and walk 4 or 5. And those guys got spun up the ladder because they were like, okay, well, you know, we love strikeouts. And so I never got my shot in the big leagues as far as a starter because it wasn't very high valued. And so you fast forward over the decades, couple decades, and now suddenly if you get a starter that goes 5 innings, you know, everybody's like, yay. But baseball, I don't think, wants that, because that puts tons of pressure on the bullpen. And what do? You suddenly have to send down a bullpen guy who's done well just so you can call up an arm that's fresh, eat up innings. And so it goes all the way to the way they train and everything. If you ever listen or watch Foul Territory with those guys, Pruszynski, I'm trying to think, Eric Kratz, like they had Dr. Meister, who's out of Arlington, who's one of the best. You know, that's who everyone's going to for their shoulder and elbows right now. And he hit it the nail on the head, how there's all these factors on all these guys pitching. That's why you're seeing all these injuries. And then the side effect of that is, hey, we got to have people in the bullpen that can, you know, 3 to 4 guys that can go multiple innings. And it's just not sustainable over 162 games. It's not going to be. So I don't know. That's my soapbox. Yep. I don't know if I'm right, but it's just kind of what I see.
Hey, Tim, you mentioned your dad, who I remember because my big brother was a huge Red Sox fan in the mid-70s, and your dad played with Denny Doyle and Rick Burleson and Butch Hobson in that infield. But he later was a Cub. He was briefly a White Sox player, and he started managing in the White Sox minor leaguers. So how does he identify these days? To which major league team does he identify with the most these days?
I think he just watches the Brewers a lot because sometimes I'll be doing the game. But in our household, one of my brothers was born when he was with the Tigers. Another was born when he was with the Cubs. And I was born when he was coaching with the White Sox. So for us, it was just about good baseball. We had WGN, and I was the remote control, right? Back in those days, you didn't have a remote control. My little brother, that's what I was. And I don't know. Just for him, he always tells these stories, still does. When he was with the Red Sox, he had teammates like Carlton Fisk and Yastrzemski, Jim Rice. Played behind Louis Tiant, who to this day he says was the most fun to play behind. Like when he was one of those enforcers, when he went to the mound, it's like, you better pick up your game because this guy's given everything he has. Love Louis Tiant. And so he has all these teammates and that's what baseball is about for him. So he loves watching good baseball. I'm named after Tim Blackwell, who was teammates with him with the Red Sox and then later with the Cubs. So just to show that if we're a baseball family, we couldn't get away from it. Thank God I was kind of good at it for a little while.
Wow.
He loves good baseball. And I think that's what people want to see now. The athleticism. That's why baseball put all these rules together, because they want to show off what these people can do besides let's just shift everybody and swing for the fence. They're putting incentives in there to show that they're fast, they're athletic, and they know how to play. And that's what I love to see.
I want to hang out with you and your dad and hear Luis Tiant stories. Because El Tiante, that's as good as it gets. All right, last thing for you, Tim. What do you think of these Cubs? Now having watched them up close in this series, what do you think of this team as they stand right now as a division contender?
They got guys that can hit home runs, and their starting pitching is lights out. I don't know if the Brewers have even scored off a starting pitcher in these first two games. And that's with having, 4 to 5 starters on the shelf right now? Pretty impressive, honestly. They've had a few miscues in the field, very strange. I think that'll get polished out. I think it's just because it's early. I know one of them there was a relay that probably should have gone home, but for whatever reason, Swanson was lining up the third, and the third baseman, I forgot who was at third, maybe Morel, but didn't get in line. That happens. You got guys not playing. Morel's just now playing third base. He's going to hit a ton of homers, but he's also going to learn third base and get better as the season goes on. But, yeah, for the most part, I mean, they're going to put up runs. And it's going to be about the starting pitching, which seems good. Right now, the bullpen, to me, is what has struggled. Clearly, the Brewers have done well against, the bullpen arms. But everybody has a problem right now. You can't look at one team in baseball and go, they're perfect. And then a month into the season, yes, it can make or break your season, but as long as you hang tight, things will come around. Injuries, those guys get healthy and come back. So, yeah, I think it's good. I think what we've seen these last two games is really good baseball on the field and with a lot going on, not just being the NL Central, but, of course, with Craig Counsell and Pat Murphy. It's a fun one.
Agreed. Thank you, Tim Dillard. Pleasure, man. Have a great game today.
Yep, thank you so much.
You got it. At Tim Dillard, Brewers pre and post. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. We're going to reset and open the phone lines back up for you, the Sox fans, as well as the Cub fans this next hour. Ben Brown later on, James Fegan later on Hit and Run on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.